Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by simply clicking on our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon at the top of the homepage or the iTunes icon, and you can listen from there. Now, today I have a very interesting topic. Have you ever heard of something called zero-point energy? Some of you have, and probably many have not. And this sounds a little bit like science fiction, zero-point energy. What it really means is energy from a vacuum. And years ago, it used to be science fiction, but now, in the 21st century, science is taking the fiction out of science fiction, developing some amazing things. My guest today, Dr. Thomas Vallone, is one of the most well-respected and influential developers and researchers in the field of zero-point energy. He is the president of Integrity Research Institute and editor of the well-respected Future Energy Newsletter and E-News. He has authored 6 books and numerous scientific studies, articles, and papers related to energy in all forms. Dr. Vallone holds a PhD in general engineering from Kennedy Western University, an MA in physics, a Bachelor of Science in physics, a Bachelor of Science in electrical engineering from SUNY at Buffalo, New York. He is also a licensed professional engineer with the state of New York. 15 years ago, he was the originator and technical consultant for the well-known documentary that has won several awards. It's called Free Energy, The Race to Zero Point, a really fascinating documentary. He is the inventor of several instruments, including the Premier Photonic Rejuvenation Energizing Machine. That sounds pretty science fiction too. The Dental Vapor Ionizer, the Powerline Gauss Meter, the Static Field Gauss Meter, the ELF Spectrum Analyzer, and many other devices. Dr. Vallone is a consulting fellow in the World Innovation Foundation. He is listed in the who's who of American writers and poets. He is a member of the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, the National Space Society, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and the American Physical Society. So it is with great pleasure to have with us today on Authors Audio. Welcome to the program, Thomas. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got started in this amazing field, which, of course, when you were younger, it was a very, very new field. I'm sure a lot of people weren't even working on it.
Sure. Years ago, I really began work in a magnetic motor, which I did for a master's project at the University of Buffalo. And it was in the physics department, and so I was intrigued by the fact that magnets perhaps might be a source of energy at some point. As it turned out, that particular homopolar generator, which caused me to write the book, The Homopolar Handbook, afterwards, really was not a source of energy as it was originally designed, Faraday disk generator. It's really something that even the Earth uses in the core of the Earth to generate the magnetic field we currently have in the Aurora Borealis, which is an electrically charged field around the Earth. So I still began attending different conferences each year devoted to what they called free energy, and it became sort of a controversial topic at the time. It even cost me my job at the patent office for several years until I got it back through an arbitration hearing. Even the State Department began questioning whether or not the conference we had planned there in 1999 would be something that would have legitimate science presented. And as it turned out, the Conference on Future Energy has become a very popular conference, and we're having another one this October at the Washington Hilton here in D.C. So in my pursuit of energy that would basically not be caused by fuel burning, I came across zero-point energy. And it's interesting that zero-point energy is something that sustains us and yet has so many different manifestations, I was surprised I couldn't find hardly any books on the topic. So as I pursued the feasibility study for my PhD project thesis, I ended up realizing that the the feasibility study I wrote was not very accessible to the general public. And so a couple of years later, I decided to write a very easily understandable book called Zero Point Energy, Fuel of the Future. And it's now on Amazon and also available through any distributors. It's about 250 pages with lots of pictures. And that tells the whole story.
The books that you sent me, and I thank you for that very much, Zero Point Energy, The Fuel of the Future by Thomas Vallone, and also Electrogravitics, and we'll get into that a little bit later. What I guess the average person wants to know is, you know, we've all been told from probably a very young age that there's no free lunch. And how can these scientists dare to come out and say this is free energy? So in which way is it free energy, and where are we in developing something that can actually use this so-called free energy?
Well, luckily, we're already experiencing it in so many different ways. Solar, for example, wind power, geothermal power, these are good examples of free energy, because really the way it's defined and the way many of the scientists I know have envisioned it being implemented in society is that there's some advanced capital investment for the equipment that would be necessary to convert the energy. But once that capital investment's made, the energy cost itself, the maintenance costs or operating expenses, are zero. And so you're getting your energy conversion for free once your equipment works. And that's the beauty of it, because you're not spending money each week or each month on fuel. And fuel burning is something that even Nikola Tesla criticized the society for pursuing, because he thought that it would have to be abandoned very soon because of the future generations. And he was absolutely correct. And that's really what we're concerned about mostly right now, is the effect it'll have on future generations. So I ended up writing a book called Harnessing the Wheelwork of Nature, Tesla's Science of Energy, which tells that whole story, including the wireless transmission of electricity.
Thomas has written many books, and he has also, I believe you have some videos on YouTube even,
Google Video. Yeah, Google Video is the most popular one. That actually is a good one to recommend for anyone interested in zero-point energy.
Yeah. I've heard you speak, and it's very interesting as you go into these things. And so this is an amazing time to be alive, because we're taking the original thoughts and ideas of this very brilliant man, Nikola Tesla, who invented alternating current, the alternating current generator and motors and so on, actually for, I believe it was Thomas Edison, was it?
Well, he only worked for Edison briefly, but Westinghouse is who really received all the patents that Tesla wrote. He was the assignee.
Well, Tom, it's a really exciting time to be alive, to see some of these innovations come along just at the point where we really need them. And we really need to get behind people like yourself and other developers of new innovative technology. And let's get on with it, because what an amazing world this could be. It could really empower people. People wouldn't have to worry about paying the hydro bill. They would have lots of energy for anything from electric engines in cars to whatever. Except for a few oil executives and their shareholders, basically I think everybody's going to be really happy. And I think even those people are going to be really happy once they get the picture. We'll probably go through this kicking and fighting and screaming for a little while, until people vote with their pocketbook and say, no, I'm buying a car, or I'm buying a house with this kind of energy in it, because it's going to save me money. So that's the end of the story on that one. And what is the difference, though, between regular energy-produced alternating current and zero-point energy, as you talk about it?
Well, actually, there isn't very much difference, except that the normal energy we're exposed to when we go to the gas station or when we pay our utility bills is the type that is delivered to us in small quantities, and we pay for those small quantities. So it's a very measured type of energy. In fact, there's a story that's a humorous story told about Edison. They gave him praise for inventing a very interesting business that said, well, you're selling something to the customer who, when he gets done with using the electron, he sends it right back to the utility company so they can resell it to the next customer all over again. And that's really what the electricity bills are like right now. The product is used but not destroyed, and yet we gladly return it right back to the power company. So there's something very mysterious about energy in that respect. It's not a consumable item per se. And when the more you look into it, the more you realize everything has energy. So much so that the thermal energy dominates, but there's also non-thermal fluctuations. In about 10 days, I'll be giving my paper at the Space Propulsion and Energy Sciences International Forum, SPESA for short, that's being held in Huntsville, Alabama, hosted by the American Institute of Physics and also American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, on this exact topic of using the zero-point energy to convert it with zero-bias diode arrays.
Just a question, Tom, but has anybody patented zero-point energy machines as of right now?
Yes, several people have. I refer to those patents in the book, and I give the patent numbers. One of the more popular ones that I like is the Frank Mead patent. In fact, I call it the very first patent that explicitly labeled zero-point energy as the source of the energy being converted. And I might as well emphasize this is a U.S. Air Force research laboratory patent. Dr. Frank Mead is a friend of mine, and I was very pleased in 1996 at the end of the year to learn that he had obtained this patent. It's 5590031. And if you go to google.com/patents, you can actually pull up this patent. And to me, that's a very interesting concept of using antennas to receive the electromagnetic fluctuations and then downshift them and convert them with the circuitry.
What about this idea, just for a moment, the Tesla's coil? Now, we know that the Earth is rotating, I think it's roughly about 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, and it's rotating through, ultimately, a magnetic field, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, was Tesla's idea in building his coil really to sort of capture use the Earth as a rotor as it's passing through this magnetic field to actually kind of create a generator? Was that what it is?
Well, no. The Earth already produces that generator from the equator to the poles. And yet that's not necessarily required for the wireless transmission of electricity.
Okay.
You're referring to perhaps his wireless Wardenclyffe Tower, which was built on the Long Island area. It's actually 1903 was the building date, and then in 2003 we had the centennial of the Wardenclyffe Tower. Our institute was the only one to celebrate that centennial.
Okay.
It really is just using the resonant cavity of the Earth ionosphere cavity, which is like a spherical capacitor, and it has over 95% efficiency in the transmission of energy, electromagnetic energy, at an 8-cycle-per-second frequency.
I've heard that for every meter above the ground, there's an approximately a 200-volt potential difference.
It can be vary from 200 up to 1,000 volts. If during thunderstorms, it can be even 1,000 volts per meter.
So, if you're out in a thunderstorm, folks, and you have any ideas that there's not a lot of energy around, you see one of these lightning bolts coming down, you realize that, in fact, we're surrounded with energy. So with the zero-point energy now machines, do they have to be built in sort of very special conditions so that the whole thing works, or how does that work?
Well, it depends on which one you pick first. After you go through the book, you can pick one in particular and then describe the construction process for it. For example, Fabrizio Pinto, a former Jet Propulsion Laboratory scientist, has patented a cantilever Casimir engine for converting zero-point energy. And he also published in the Physical Review journal the thermodynamics behind it. So that would require nanotechnology. It's more on a MEMS scale, which is a microelectromagnetic electromechanical machining process. But there are various methods for producing these, depending on which one you pick to manufacture. In my case, I'm advocating the use of diodes, and diodes are off-the-shelf components that are already available. And what I'm proposing to use is the smallest ones available, ones that are on the size of a couple nanometers in diameter, and then going into thousands and millions of those in an array.
Now, you say in the book that in a vacuum, it vibrates and fluctuates. And this is part of where the energy of zero point is coming from. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And I might as well mention our website, integrityresearchinstitute.org. If you click on zero point energy utilization, you can see a page full of links that help explain the concepts that we're discussing right now, including the zero point energy diode project executive summary. And really, the vibration we're talking about is something that is present in everything, including at the junction of these diodes, the junction of various types of solid-state devices. And it's becoming an issue, for example, that causes what's referred to as a Casimir force. And the Casimir force is something that, as Dr. Pinto described in his keynote address at our last conference we had here in Washington, D.C., he says it's the same type of force that forces two boats to bump into each other if they get too close. He says it's well known, anyone that uses the water for pleasure boating, he says you normally avoid getting too close to another boat because it's almost impossible to pull away from that boat once you're within, say, a few meters of the boat. And that's literally the same type of process that the Casimir force creates. There's more frequencies on the outside of those boats than there is in between the boats. And so Dr. Pinto says this is a macroscopic proof of the Casimir force operating in the same type of system.
You have a question here, one of your talking points that I'd like to bring up. What is the difference between electrogravitics and electrokinetics? And you have written two books on this subject.
My first book is called Electrogravitic Systems, and it's the story of Townsend Brown's work in what literally was called the Electrogravitic Systems and also the Aviation Studies Reports in 1952 and 56 as well. The interesting thing is that electrogravitics, as originally was proposed, is only present in one of Brown's patents. And it was a British patent that he patented. And then from then on, he referred to electrokinetics. So he defined something that he saw happening with high voltage when it's applied to various types of asymmetric capacitors or even circular disks. And he found that it produced a force that was directed toward the positive charge. And still, he thought that gravity was being affected. In fact, he even wrote an article called How I Control Gravity. So he found that there was an effect he couldn't explain, and that when he started to use the electrokinetic phrase, to him that made more sense. And I tend to agree, because the second volume I produced, called Electrogravitics 2, is more devoted to, for example, the Air Force Labs testing of Brown's work. There's an article from them. And also the explanation of Dr. Jeff Menko's work. And Jeff Menko is a professor emeritus from the West Virginia University, and he produced, which I find very remarkable, a book that explained the electrokinetic equation. And the electrokinetic equation or electrokinetic force was something he developed independently of Townsend Brown's work. And when I saw that equation that described a force being created from high voltage being applied to an object, I wrote to him and I said, did you know about Townsend Brown? And he used the same word for a similar type of application. And he said, nope, I had no knowledge of his prior inventions. So to me, this is a proof that this is a fundamental principle of nature that two independent scientists came across. And then I was able to, in this book, produce also a journal paper that now has been presented at the Space Technologies Conference and Forum as well.
You're in a very cutting edge science, and it must be interesting to wake up every day to find out if somebody else has developed some small headway in one direction or another, because that's usually the way it works. And the age that we're living in, it seems that people will say, I think time's speeding up because things are happening so fast. I have a tendency to say, no, time isn't speeding up, but the number of things that are happening in any given amount of time are speeding up. There's a whole lot more of them. And we're finding in even the production of different devices on the market or anything like that, that things are happening a lot faster. It doesn't take nearly as long from one point to the next as it used to. And so this kind of energy you're speaking of, how long do you think before some of this technology could be included in something for the general public?
Well, we're actually looking toward, a 10-year time frame. This is an exciting time to live in, as you say. And what's interesting is Bernard Haich recently, just in the past month, received a patent on zero-point energy as well. So there's at least three or four of them out there now that have very reputable scientists and physicists behind them. And so it's really going through an upswing. And as I point out in the preface to the Zero Point Energy Fuel of the Future book, there's an interesting graph that a colleague of mine from overseas produced on page 5, and it's a Casimir effect history of a paper. And from 1950 to the present time, it's an exponential increase in the number of papers that have been produced on the Casimir force. So, and he cites all the different countries with the little flags next to their names to show that every country now is getting on board and joining the effort.
Besides Tesla, was there anybody that was really making headway in this field before the 50s generally? Or?
Well, we have to give credit to Casimir, of course. Casimir really did a lot of his work earlier than that. And of course, Max Planck. As I point out in the history of the zero-point energy chapter 2 of my book, I really start off with Max Planck in 1912 and then Einstein, who used the zero-point term. But see, Max Planck produced the radiation law, which he tried to explain what they call a black body curve, and he wasn't quite accurate. It was off, and he didn't know why. And then when he discovered a year later that that it was missing the half of a quantum, it's one half HF is the actual formula, but half of a quantum was missing, and he added that to the term. So even at 0 degrees, there's still the half quantum of energy left. He got the exact match. And so it's Planck's second law that became the birth of zero-point energy in the modern age. So then we give credit to Dirac and Debye and Heisenberg and Einstein, of course, and all the ones later that used it too.
Did you build a UFO energy generator when you were in a physics grad student?
I'd like to take credit for that. Actually, what you're referring to is the homopolar generator, which I did build based on a UFO story. Norman Paulson is the author of a book called Sunburst, Return of the Ancients. And that book is only available through, used bookstores and maybe Amazon. But the fact was, he described in that book that he had been a visitor or had a ride and then saw this generating system. And he describes it as producing electricity from the center to the outer edge, and also with two disks on the same axis moving in opposite directions, it was a source of propulsion. And so I was intrigued enough to contact the community, and in 1980, I went out to Santa Barbara to see this generator that he had built at a cost of $25,000, and Bruce De Palma was the one that built it. And as I found out years later, it was not a homopolar generator that he apparently claims to have seen on a UFO, but he let Bruce De Palma build the single rotor Faraday generator as sort of something that he thought was an imitation or a similar type of generator. So I basically spent years following up on that particular description to the point now where I'm convinced it was more likely a Searle generator. And that's where I find the most intriguing parts still yet to be discovered, is the Searle generation process.
Now, you mentioned also bioelectromagnetic healing. Maybe we could just talk about that, because that sounds rather exciting, too.
Yeah, that's usually the most popular for a general audience. Mm-hmm. The invention or discovery of bioelectromagnetics is actually a 100-year-old science, and I've given presentations at many conferences and on the subject, including the Whole Person Healing Conference just a couple of years ago. And what's interesting is that using high-voltage electricity in various devices was actually traced back to Tesla. Tesla used to give lectures on it, and doctors started finding that a lot of diseases were treatable using high-voltage Tesla coils. And you could be just sitting near it, for example, to get the benefits of what is basically a frequency bath. Lots of different frequencies are produced from a Tesla coil, but also the voltage is very therapeutic. Most people, even doctors, don't realize that the body stores energy in two ways only. And that is, one, it stores it by chemical gradients. We're all familiar with different electrolytes and chemicals in the body. But the other is electrical gradients. And the cells, individual human biological cells, are normally storing electricity across each cell membrane. And what's surprising when you look into it, and it's in the book described in detail, is that every cell membrane is like a capacitor, exactly the way Tesla described it, as a charge retainer or storage, and it holds 100,000 volts per centimeter or 10 million volts per meter. Now, to me, 10 million volts across a meter's distance is a huge voltage. That's about to break down if it's just air. You're going to get a big spark. But the cell is used to that voltage gradient, and it wants to have that much charge across that small distance. And you can get down to the size of the cell, and yet the gradient's the same. So my point is, when you sit near, if you're, say, having low energy one day, you're having a health challenge, any number of causes for your feeling debilitated, if you're sitting next to a Tesla coil or using what we actually sell is a Premier Junior, a small handheld high-voltage device with a noble gas tube, just like a violet ray. It's an imitation of that, well-insulated. And you put it near your skin or on the skin, immediately the entire body gets charged up to a higher voltage. So in other words, in a few minutes, you literally feel like you have more energy. And it's a physical effect. You actually do have more energy because the charges now are present across every cell membrane as they normally would like to be. The other nice thing that I discovered, and the last thing I would add to this, is that Jim Oshman, Dr. Jim Oshman and myself, are the two co-discoverers of a principle that electrons are antioxidants. As we use vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin K, selenium and zinc, we get the benefits of that pill molecule carrying an extra electron that it donates to free radicals that gobble it up. Free radicals love to gobble up the electrons, and they do so in a ravenous state where they continue to cause chain reactions throughout our body, which is the chief cause of aging. So instead, my vision is electric clothing and various other devices, including electrotherapy, to provide the body with free electrons. So then we're quenching free radicals in the most direct, easy, and inexpensive way instead of popping pills all day long.
This voltage that this device produces, it's a high voltage but low amperage, right? Very low.
Exactly. That's right.
Really, what's happening is this high voltage that you described, it's really just actually being around the body. The body starts to resonate at that higher voltage that is normal to the body, and that is what really allows the body to kind of get in tune again with itself. Is that right?
Well, there's two, as I described, two or three processes going on, and the resonance has nothing to do with the charging of a capacitor.
Okay.
It's just simply charge transfer, and then the capacitor gets, filled up with electrons. Mm-hmm. So that's the immediate effect that produces the energy. But the other interesting thing is, and this is also related to light, and all of our devices have a gas tube that produces light frequencies too, and that is any electromagnetic frequency is actually usable by the body. So when you get exposed to a Tesla coil or a light source, like, for example, there's a company called LightRelease.com. They sell a device less than $100. I use it periodically, even once a week, I would say. It sits right next to my bed. And all it is a bunch of LEDs, including an infrared LED. And it's wonderful how penetrating that device is, little panel of LEDs. And yet it's producing light frequencies that the DNA can store and then produce biophotons within the body.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of processes that are going on when you get exposed to electrotherapy, and it's all therapeutic with virtually no side effects, and that's the beauty of this type of therapy.
And you're not advocating that people live close to power lines for this particular reason, are you?
No, in fact, I'm an expert on power line and magnetic fields. That's how I got started in 1987 when there was a power line magnetic field report from New York State that cited a factor of 3 milligauss or higher magnetic fields from chronic exposure. No, in fact, I get asked that question very often, and I can answer it authoritatively, and that is power line magnetic fields or any other exposure to chronic electromagnetic fields is actually detrimental. Yeah, it's just like taking some of the vitamins, like vitamin A or selenium or a few others. You take them in large quantities, they're toxic. But small quantities are very therapeutic.
So it's all about the dose then.
Exactly. Dose dependent.
How do you see the big forces of monetary forces out there, like oil companies and so on and so forth? They must be aware of this, and you know, really, are we not headed for a complete change in the empowerment of people through such devices as yours? And so this must be, how did you get any flack from those kind of individuals?
Well, not from oil companies, but as I say, in 99, there still was a very hostile political environment toward any of these proposals. And that's when our conference at the State Department was actually ridiculed in the press extensively, so much so that I lost my job at the patent office for no good reason. And that was the interesting thing that the arbitrator pointed out. It was all political pressure and media pressure that caused the criticism to be blown out of proportion. So yeah, the criticism has been there, but I think with the new administration, we're seeing a big change, because more and more scientists are realizing we have to be open to radical ideas, or else we're not going to really get anywhere. You know, they say the definition of insanity is do the same thing you've always done and expect something different. We can't do that anymore. And so this is the impetus for a lot of normally conservative people to go outside the box and start looking for new ideas that only, you know, maverick type of innovative people look for. And that's my specialty. I look for things that are neglected and discarded, and usually, in fact, what's interesting is Make Magazine. It's called MAKE. Make Magazine did a special on me, an article, cover story called Patently Curious, and right above my picture it says, "Physicist Tom Vallone looks at technologies most scientists consider junk." And that's pretty true, even though it's pretty blatant how he stated it, you know, but that's where you have to look sometimes.
Well, there's another thing in your book, Tom, where you talk about the relationship between zero-point energy and consciousness. I'm wondering maybe you could just go through that a little bit for our listeners.
Well, I actually have a chapter in the book, Zero-Point Energy, Fuel the Future, which if anyone would like a catalog that includes all the books, they're welcome to call the 800 number, 295-7674, and we'll mail one out to you. But the connection between zero-point energy and consciousness, I feel, is actually a very valuable one, and also one that's founded on very fundamental quantum mechanical principles. And that is the interrelationship and entanglement that is actually present throughout the universe. Many physicists, for example, describe the fact that over the billions of years that the universe has interacted, there's a lot of atoms that have become entangled with other atoms, even though they're separated by great distances. And furthermore, which I find even more easily understandable, is the fact that the quantum vacuum is actually a medium. It's literally a fluctuating, moving medium, much like a sea. And the ocean is a good example of something that looks like it's very stable and yet has a wave nature to it. And that's the way the quantum vacuum behaves. In fact, there's a chapter in the book describing propulsion and the connection between the speed of sound and the speed of light. The equations are the same, almost to the similar form and similar behavior, the exponential behavior of resistance as you approach those speed limits, and yet the medium, the two mediums are different. So the analogies really get to the point where if we're ever going to explain consciousness, especially when we talk about the mysterious parts of consciousness that might involve remote viewing or telepathy or any things that people really cannot explain today, having a medium that is actually physically based oftentimes can help in describing the physical basis for such a phenomenon to occur.
Now, you were kind enough, Tom, to send me a book, one of your books on anti-gravitics, and I'm just wondering if you're really talking about UFOs as people have come to know them, or is this something a little bit different on your part?
Well, I would hesitate to use those phrases because they're so steeped in kind of the mystical stuff that people normally think of being unscientific. Instead, we do describe in the book, for example, that there's a good basis for why toroidal-shaped or circular-shaped craft would have a benefit in causing an effect on the permeability and permittivity of space. And this is citing Dr. Fronig's work. So I find it very fascinating. For example, in my electrogravitics book, Townsend Brown found that a circular craft was beneficial for a number of reasons. And now in the Zero Point Energy book, I'm citing Dr. Fronig's work, where a circular craft once again has benefits for a number of reasons. So whether or not you want to call them flying saucers, it's up to you, but I tend to want to describe the physical phenomenon more specifically so people won't necessarily turn off to these new concepts that actually are emerging in very viable and very promising areas.
Well, our time is slowly wrapping up, but I just wanted to thank Thomas Vallone, Dr. Thomas Vallone, who's the CEO of his own institute. It's called the Integrity Research Institute.org. That's his website, the Integrity Research Institute.org. You can go there and look at all the different kinds of things that Tom has available, including ordering books there. And I think this is a really exciting career for kids coming up. If you're good at math and if you're good at science and physics, this is a really great opportunity to walk into a wonderful world of discovery, really. And once you get on the research angle, you're really into some really amazing stuff. So it's just been a great pleasure to have you, Tom. And I think you also have a regular e-newsletter coming out, right?
Yes, and also subscribe to our free Future Energy e-news. It comes out once a month.
And as time passes so quickly, we have come to the end of another edition of Authors Audio with our very special guest, Dr. Tom Vallone. And his book that we have been talking about today is all about zero-point energy. We talked about an awful lot of things, so make sure you listen to the program. You can listen to it two or three times if you like, just to get all the information that was packed in this program. Tom really gave us an awful lot of good information, and I want to thank him for that. And until next time, this is Jake D. Steele, your host, saying keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.